Hello and welcome to the Learning Mate podcast, where we speak to subject matter experts in the fields of education, education technology, and workforce development to learn more about advances and issues in the industry from cradle to career. I am your host, Keith Chandler. And in this episode, we are exploring the evolving landscape of learning design. And to help me with that discussion, we have two very special guests. First is my colleague from Learning Mate. We have Victoria Pilvinen, our Senior Vice President of K-12 Product Solutions. Victoria's educational journey spans diverse roles, including working with homeschooling organizations, leading an international virtual school, and contributing to traditional schooling for private, charter, and public institutions. Her passion for individualized learning blossomed through these varied experiences as an education analyst and practitioner. Victoria's commitment to education is grounded in a deep appreciation for the learning sciences, evidence, and theory. Today, she applies this appreciation in her work, leveraging extensive knowledge in pedagogy, learning analytics, and product strategy. Her expertise extends to design tailored digital curriculum products, professional learning tools, and operational solutions for online and blended learning. Victoria, welcome to the Learning Mate podcast.
Thanks so much, Keith.
And next, we have Dr. Jane Lammers, is a respected lecturer and researcher and an expert in learning design, pedagogy, and e-learning, committed to designing for equitable and empowering learning opportunities. She began her career in education teaching middle school and high school English, language arts, and reading. She went on to attain a master's in reading education from the University of Central Florida and a PhD in curriculum and instruction from Arizona State University. Her past research focuses on studying adolescents' literacy practices and asks the question of why educators should care that youth are engaged in practices such as online fan fiction and also participation in YouTube and other social networks for the purposes of learning. Dr. Lammers currently serves as the Director of Learning Design for Edmentum, a K-12 curriculum assessment and services provider supporting over 43,000 schools in all 50 states and over 100 countries worldwide. She also currently lectures at the University of Pennsylvania Graduate School of Education, teaching the Instructional Technology module in the Mid-Career Doctoral Program in Educational Leadership. Dr. Lammers, thank you for joining the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Keith.
You are very welcome. So let's start with this question that I always like to start with everyone, is why education? Dr. Lammers, what inspired you to work in education?
Well, so for me, education was a means of opportunity. It provided pathways from what probably could have been some very limiting family circumstances to opening up doors for me all over the world and at levels that I really could only imagine. So I think I thrived in education, but I also really could see that not everybody did and not everybody does. So my commitment to working in education stems from that recognition that when it's done well, when it's designed for equity and engagement, for the diversity of all learners who are in our classrooms, education not only levels any inequities in the playing fields in our society, but it unlocks possibilities for people to thrive. And I really think that we do better in a society where everybody thrives.
We very much do. Thank you so much for sharing that motivation. Victoria, same question for you. What inspired you to work in education?
Yeah, I think three things kind of rose to the top as, just throughout my life's journey. I really liked how children like play and learn. And so I wondered, what did that mean in sort of like a context of a classroom or beyond four walls? And then, self-learning. I love to learn. I like to have my own development opportunities and reflect. And so I think that drive led me naturally in this field. And then finally, I would say, I like that we can make change sometimes like on a classroom level pretty quickly, like maybe not always systemically because we have other challenges that we can't always disrupt. But, on a classroom level, I could, do some research, I could plan, I could implement, I could reflect, and I could iterate pretty quickly and, do something different that very day in the next class period to, for the next school year, whatever the size was. So I would say those three things, Keith.
Awesome. Thank you, Victoria. So you and I are going to kind of tag team this this interview today, because you two are definitely the experts in learning design, and I am very much the layman here. So Victoria, I understand that you have a question, an opening question for Dr. Lammers.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we want to start by thinking about this definition of learning design, because we're all coming to it from different places. And being that this is part of your role with Edmentum, Dr. Lammers, you know, could you share a little bit about how you're defining it and, you know, whether that's evolved, you know, at all in your career?
Absolutely. I don't think there's a solid shared definition of learning design across the field like there are for some of our educational terms. So I'll share that my team here at Edmentum, we sit at the intersection of three streams of information. So we look at what do we know about good learning and pedagogy. So we read the learning science and education research. What's happening in today's classroom? So we try to understand what are the realities facing schools, absenteeism, the pandemic, learning loss, teachers' realities, disengagement, social and emotional learning concerns, teachers' overwhelm, AI, like all of that goes into the milieu of what's happening in today's classroom. So we have to pay attention to that as the second stream. And then the third is what's possible with technologies, specifically our technologies, right? Like what can our software do? What can our programs do? What might be possible? And so then my team takes all of that, mixes it up together, sees what direction the product managers want us to go and the business want us to go. And we funnel that to the teams we work with. So we inform our product development teams, those who actually write things and design things. We give them guidelines, and we also work with our product managers to help them make informed decisions based on this stream of information. We work with leadership to make sure that they understand what's happening in the literature and what's happening in classrooms that they don't always get direct access to. And then our sales and marketing folks, like how do we help them tell the right story about the good learning that's happening in our product. So I was told when I interviewed for this role that it is the most interconnected role in the company. And 15, 16 months on, I can agree. Like I talk to nearly every department, but also to people outside of the company to try to understand what's really happening in classrooms.
I have a question about increased focus on skills. So how do learning design teams bridge the gap between theoretical knowledge and practical application?
Yeah, we go back to that intersection metaphor, right? Okay. And I say that we then funnel that information to the different folks. So what we do, all of the people who work on my team are former educators and have that kind of reality classroom experience. And so we'll take what's happening in the theory and what's happening in the literature and use it to put together frameworks that our design teams work with. So we have to be translators in some ways of what's happening in the literature, what's happening in the classroom, and what do we know our product needs are and our designers' needs are. And so we give them actionable guidelines, best practices, other kinds of guidance. We also work with our product managers to leverage all of the theory and information that we have come across to help them inform implementation guidance for the partners that actually use our products out in the field. So we write a lot of documents is essentially it. We write a lot of guidelines documents, a lot of like presentations that help translate what's happening in the literature and what's happening in the field to the other people that need that information.
On the operationalizing front within Learning Mate or within the clients we work with, it's what framework do you already have in place that you're planning to use, whether you're one of our product teams, one of our solution teams, or you're working directly with our client teams, you know, what are you going to use? Does everyone understand how it's going to be used? So really making sure that there is no assumptions left in the work, because when that happens, then people do what they want, and that may not be what's best for kids. And so we want to make sure that, riffing off what you were saying there, Dr. Lammers, it's like everybody needs to know how to interpret the research, interpret the frameworks, the guidelines, so that they can implement in a way, because so much of our business depends on scaling the work.
Yeah. And to do another riff back of what you said, Victoria. So part of my career was in teacher education and preparing teachers for classrooms. And what we know from the research about teachers is they do what they were taught unless they are explicitly guided to do something different. And we can see this play out in our operations and in our society, where people assume that how they were taught is the best way to go. Or they have these assumptions about how learning should happen, but they're not actually steeped in the literature and the research. Why would they be, right? So it is really important to disrupt assumptions and to give like actionable guidance and rationale behind it. We have to defend our choices all the time. Like, why did we say that this is the skill that needs to come before that skill? Or why do we say, rather than using video, use an interactive here, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And then when we get the data, it's like, how do we gather those insights to then say, well, we made a mistake, or this isn't what's best, or it's not what's best for this model, you know, but it's fine for this other model, it's working well. So like, how can we tweak it for these individuals? So yeah, it's full circle, which is what I really love about it.
We're getting into the weeds a little bit. And so I have another question about, you know, we're seeing online learning curriculum providers expanding their focus beyond K-12 learning and into the adult learner space, accommodating the lifelong learning models. You are both very much lifelong learners. And so, you know, while others are also focusing on more career pathways. So Dr. Lammers, where is Edmentum placing its focus right now?
Well, we remain focused on the K-12 learning spaces, and yet we are also recognizing that those learning spaces are changing, right? So Edmentum just recently announced a partnership with America Succeeds, and their durable skills framework is informing the development work that we're doing for some new career-connected learning courses. So even though we don't teach in the adult or career space, we are recognizing that as early as middle school, young people need to be exposed to what's possible. What are the possible pathways? And so I think with this partnership that we've now got, we're making sure that the pathways and the skills that are in our courses are those ones that are the most desired and most recognized by employers. We're also working with our partners globally to understand what are the marketplaces beyond the US border calling for? What sorts of career pathways are helpful in those spaces, and making sure we have offerings that meet those diverse needs as well.
I know that Victoria, both you and Dr. Lammers are both really passionate about equity, access, and inclusion in the learning design space.
Yeah, absolutely. We're thinking about all of the different learners that we serve in this space. And so just curious to start on the accessibility front, you know, but what are you all doing? How are you tweaking your frameworks, your guidelines, your implementation models to make sure that all learners are supported in the way that they need to with the different abilities that they're joining your programs with? We can start there.
Wonderful. Well, just last year, we did a little bit of a shuffling around of who reports where. And now our accessibility strategy manager reports to me. And so that's created this much tighter bond between what we know is needed from like WCAG guidelines, Quality Matters rubrics, all the various external sources that kind of rate accessibility. So we have all of her expertise and knowledge directly informing what we know from a pedagogical perspective and from a research perspective as to what's engaging for the diversity of learners. So we are constantly going through processes of making sure that we increase access, not limit it, through the design. We do a lot of education internally to make sure that our content developers, the designers, the art and media folks understand some of the needs of those particular populations who may use our products with screen readers or other modifications and things like that. So we're highly sensitive to that. And I think we've got a really great partnership now that makes sure that accessibility and inclusivity is considered in all of our frameworks and our design processes.
When I joined Learning Mate, you know, part of my job was to make sure that I met everybody in the organization. And so I went from, you know, group to group, team to team, and was able to, you know, pull up a chair next to them or get on a Zoom call with them, right? And I was just so happy when I met our quality assurance team on the accessibility side, because we had members from the deaf community and whatnot that were employed by Learning Mate, you know, and were getting content or access to the platforms and running the tests. And, you know, to have those community members actually interacting with what we were doing and telling us where it worked, where it didn't, just brought an opportunity that I hadn't had before in some of this work, where I was, you know, leaning on others to just, you know, make sure we were working directly with and our students or teachers, you know. And so we want to do that directness too. And we, you know, can do that through focus group testing, through user testing and whatnot, bringing them into the space. But just knowing that we were also employing those folks just added a level of assurance for me in how we were addressing quality and supporting learners and teachers and whomever was interacting with the platforms and the content.
That's really wonderful. I think our size has been such that we're relying on external auditors and our strategy manager, who has a deep commitment to ensuring that we're equitable for all the populations that you're describing. But we've done a few different kinds of audits recently that have brought people with different perspectives into our products to give us their, to help us see what we can't see. And so we kind of do it that way as one means of ensuring that we're not leaving anyone out unintentionally.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so when we think about that inclusivity, right, or, you know, being inclusive in our learning materials, just curious if you have any practical tips that you could share for others that may be listening to this podcast so that they could have it as a takeaway.
I think that the best practical tip, oddly, comes back from my research. One of the studies I did of a fan fiction space was with a student who was training to be a special education researcher. And he came to me one time and said, "So you talk about these fandom spaces, are they actually accessible?" And so we did a study. We kind of went through the site and realized, like, in that case, we were using the WCAG guidelines. And we analyzed the space. And so that was eye-opening to me to realize that I was suddenly talking about something as beneficial, but then had to recognize yet again, beneficial for some, right? Not for all. So I think the biggest practical tip I have is to put yourself in as much as possible, and technology, I think, helps us do that, into the space of learners of difference with our products or with our instruction, and to see what does and does not come through. See what challenges they have. Like, listen to a screen reader reading something that you've produced. And if you can navigate it in that way, then you're increasing access. But if it sounds like gobbledygook or it's not conveying the meaning correctly, then you've got some design work to rethink.
I'd like to go back real quick on your research. I'm a little bit fascinated with your research. We had spoke a little bit before we started recording about your kind of love for fantasy fiction. And so your research is in, you know, how adolescents interact with fan fiction. And so how do you incorporate these ideas into the design of Edmentum's curriculum to foster student engagement?
Well, I've not yet found a place to actually bring fan fiction into our courses. I'm not surprised. But what I learned from from being a researcher who was also an English educator, right? I had to interact with English teachers and prepare English teachers for the entirety of my career. And fan fiction is not a subject on the standards, right? So I've, for the entirety of my research career, been looking not necessarily at the actual activities of what the youth were doing, but what are the practices? What are the literacies that they develop? What's the learning that happens? What do we learn about how learning and teaching happens in these more organic spaces that are constrained by the platform, but what do they do with that? And then I take those principles and infuse them into my teaching, into the frameworks that we have. So we understand what engagement looks like, what's motivating for young people, what sorts of interaction do they need to see? How do we foster relationships in online spaces where sometimes we don't think of them as very relational?
Excellent. I know we're running a little short on time, so I do have one last question for the both of you. You're both very much lifelong learners, and I love to get recommendations from lifelong learners about for both myself and for our listeners as well. So do either of you have any recommendations, either a book, a podcast, film, documentary, any resource that could help guide our listeners either on this topic or a topic that's passionate to you? Dr. Lammers, let's start with you.
I have been revisiting the work of bell hooks. And so her work always inspires me. And since we were just talking about inclusivity, one in particular is Teaching Community, and she gives us a pedagogy of hope. And I think hope is something that we need more of in education. Her other book, All About Love, it's surprising how many applications to relationships with students and the work in education come from a book about love.
That's beautiful. I'm so excited to hear about those.
Any recommendations from you, Victoria?
I had the opportunity to read the book Quiet, which is it's a book that is, you know, it's for, some people say it's for business management leadership. I think it's for life. It's, you know, we have these buckets of you're introverted or you're extroverted, and you know, there's been some debunking of those various you know, tools out there that sort of classify folks in those ways. And Quiet does a great job of just helping bring to life like that, you know, what that introversion really is and how it manifests or comes to life. So I think it's just like when you think about the value of silence and solitude, and, you know, it kind of helps you see like that those people are a great part of our world. And, you know, how do you leverage that in your work, but also like in your personal relationships? You know, what does that look like when you're interacting and having, you know, meaningful times with people?
Beautiful. Thank you so much both for those recommendations. Victoria Pilvinen, Dr. Jane Lammers, thank you so much for joining the Learning Mate podcast today and talking to us about learning design. I appreciate it.
It was a wonderful conversation. I look forward to sharing this episode with people who ask me, what do I do?
You mean parents?
That's exactly right. And former colleagues who are like, what are you doing now?
That's so awesome. Thanks so much, Keith. Thanks, Dr. Lammers.
Once again, those recommendations from Victoria Pilvinen, the book Quiet by Susan Cain, and from Dr. Jane Lammers, that recommendation was Teaching Community, A Pedagogy of Hope by Bell Hooks. You can find links to those books on our website, learningmate.com/podcast. There you will find our library of episodes, live links to all of the resources we reference during our episodes, and a questionnaire if you would like to be a guest or have an idea for a topic. Please feel free to start the conversation. The Learning Mate podcast is a production of Learning Mate Solutions Incorporated. Thank you once again to our guests, Dr. Jane Lammers and Victoria Pilvinen. I am your host, Keith Chandler, and until next time, thank you for listening.